Versa Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The U.S. Wednesday said the number of terror incidents in the world declined last year. For a second year in a row, while the Islamic State remains the deadliest jihadist group, carrying out more attacks and causing more fatalities. But the State Department's acting coordinator for counterterrorism, Justin Sibrel, said the IS group experienced serious setbacks in 2016.
ISIS remained the most capable terrorist organization globally in 2016, directing and inspiring terrorist cells, networks, and individuals around the world, even as it faced increased military pressure in Iraq and Syria and suffered considerable territorial losses throughout the year.
He listed several defeats of Islamic State in Iraq, culminating in the liberation of the northern city of Mosul. While much of northern Syria has been cleared of an IS presence, leading to the assault on its de facto capital, Raqqa, by U.S.-backed rebels. Terrorism analyst Max Abrams is at Northeastern University.
And that claim, at this point, seems rather trite, because everybody basically agrees that the organization has been weakened. And that's a really good thing.
The U.S. said more than 11,000 terror attacks occurred in 2016, resulting in more than 25,000 fatalities, with most attacks taking place in five countries: Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Nigeria, and Pakistan. A Kenyan court Wednesday sentenced three men to life in prison for stripping and sexually assaulting a woman they believed had dressed provocatively. They avoided a death sentence because Kenya's ban on executions. The video of the attack at a gas station near Nairobi 3 years ago circulated on social media, prompting marches aimed at ending violence against women called hashtag MyDressMyChoice. This is VOA News. 80-year-old Arizona Senator John McCain, the Republican presidential nominee in 2008, has been diagnosed with an aggressive form of brain cancer. The former Vietnam War prisoner of war, who had served in Congress more than 30 years, underwent surgery to remove a blood clot, and tissue analysis later revealed the presence of glioblastoma. Larry Sabato is a University of Virginia political science professor.
It's a tragedy, and we certainly wish Senator McCain well. I think everyone does. There's an example of bipartisanship or tripartisanship. Democrats, Republicans, and Independents will wish him a full recovery. It's a very tough illness, as anyone knows who's known someone with brain cancer. And, of course, Senator Ted Kennedy had the very same thing.
Kennedy, the longtime Massachusetts senator and younger brother of the late President John F. Kennedy, died of cancer in 2009. McCain won re-election to a six-year term just last November. The U.S. Defense Department says Turkey published what the state-run news agency claims are locations of U.S. military posts in Syria. The Anadolu News Agency Tuesday named the locations of 10 posts. A Pentagon spokesman said its release has the potential to endanger American personnel and disrupt ongoing operations against Islamic State. Meanwhile, the Washington Post reports the Trump administration has decided to halt a covert program by the Central Intelligence Agency to arm and train rebels in Syria. It quotes two U.S. officials as saying the decision is aimed at improving ties with Russia. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has decided to keep metal detectors and other security measures in place at the Noble Sanctuary and Temple Mount complex in Jerusalem after two Israeli policemen were killed by Israeli Arabs last week. Muslim prayers were heard in the streets near the Lion's Gate as a form of protest, signaling a refusal by Muslims to pass through those metal detectors. Mr. Netanyahu, on a European trip, is expected to take up the matter with his security advisors Thursday. Venezuela's defense chief Wednesday called on the people of Venezuela to back the government's plan to hold an election for a special constituent assembly to rewrite the country's constitution.
La Fuerza Armada Nacional Bolivariana.
Vladimir Petrino called on Venezuelans to use their good judgment during the scheduled July 30 vote. The appeal came after the U.S. threatened strong and swift sanctions if the vote is carried out. The opposition says the ballot is intended to keep President Nicolas Maduro in power through dictatorial means. Chile's Senate Wednesday narrowly approved a bill legalizing abortion in certain cases. Abortion is to be allowed when a mother's life is in danger, when a fetus is determined to be unviable, or when a woman becomes pregnant as a result of rape. Chile is one of the few countries left that has made abortion illegal without exceptions. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations urges more international cooperation on Africa.
Enhancing African capacities is essentially both in the context of our collective response to international peace and security challenges, as well as for the self-reliance of the African continent.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. The International Criminal Court orders a review of former President Laurent Gbagbo's detention. We'll get reaction. Ivory Coast President Ouattara reshuffles his cabinet. And Liberia's Elections Commission publishes a provisional candidates list, minus the presidential and vice presidential candidates of a key party.
Mr. Bronski is now on the list because when it comes to the presidency, it's about a ticket. So the ticket comprises a presidential candidate and a vice presidential candidate. If one is affected, it means the other is affected.
Henry Flomo is spokesman for the National Elections Commission of Liberia. Malawi's agriculture minister and two others are arrested for corruption. And Ghanaian chocolatiers hope to expand their business outside the country. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN Secretary General urged the international community on Wednesday to, in his words, change the narrative about Africa. He said countries should cooperate more with the continent to recognize its vast potential and prevent and manage conflicts there. From the United Nations, viewers Margaret Bashir has more.
Antonio Guterres told a Security Council debate about enhancing peace and security in Africa that the African Union and the United Nations have a shared interest in neutralizing conflicts before they escalate and managing them effectively when they do happen.
Enhancing African capacities is essentially both in the context of our collective response to international peace and security challenges, as well as for the self-reliance of the African continent.
He noted the challenge posed by terrorism and extremist groups, including Somalia-based Al-Shabaab.
It is my deep belief that with enhanced support to AMISOM, the African Union force, and predictable funding, along with a coordinated effort to build the Somali National Army and police forces, Al-Shabaab can be defeated.
Guterres welcomed the initiative by the Group of Five Sahel countries to create a joint force to fight terrorism, as well as the Lake Chad Basin Multinational Joint Task Force, which is battling Boko Haram. Smail Cherugui, the Commissioner for Peace and Security of the African Union, told the Council that African troops face some of the most challenging situations without adequate equipment and financial resources. He urged more investment in conflict prevention and management tools, as well as in countering the threat and spread of violent extremism. The continent is also coping with potential famine situations in several countries, none of which are solely the product of drought. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley criticized the actors responsible for conflicts which have led to these crises.
These famines are a sign of a collective failure, and any effective response must begin with the nations of Africa themselves. AU member states must ramp up their response to this crisis.
On July 8th, the United States announced an additional $446 million in humanitarian assistance to people facing food crises in South Sudan, Nigeria, and Somalia, bringing this fiscal year's total to $1.4 billion. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara Wednesday reshuffled his cabinet, replacing the ministers of defense, budget, and the interior. Mutinous soldiers demanding promised bonus payments took over a number of cities in May this year, leading to the death of at least one civilian and several others wounded. New Defense Minister Hamed Bakayoko said the army needed to be reformed to instill discipline. All this as the Reuters news agency reported gunfire across Ivory Coast's main city of Abidjan late Wednesday. Jean-Gervais Tchéyidé is the vice president in charge of finance and budget for former President Laurent Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party. He says what's needed in Ivory Coast is reconciliation, not cabinet reshuffle, and it must start with the release of all political prisoners.
This is not what the people is waiting for. What the Ivorian people are waiting for is real changes in terms of national reconciliation. This is the key of the future. The rest is nonsense. the reshuffle of the government brings nothing to the country, apart from taking some precautions for their own safety, because there are some problems among themselves. Now the former coalition in power is now split into three parts. One side, Mr. Ouattara, and his political party. Another side is Mr. Didier and his own party. And the third side is Mr. Soro Guillaume, with the former rebels and all those people who want now to take the power. This is not good for the country. What is good for the country is, how do the government free the political prisoners? How do they create conditions for the political exile to come back to the country so that we can talk about the future of our country?
But, Mr. Chaidi, it takes two to tango. And what is the opposition doing also to reach out to the government to bring about this reconciliation that you are talking about?
Let me tell you that reconciliation in a country like Cote d'Ivoire in this situation is the responsibility of those who are in power. It is not the responsibility of the opposition, whose members are in prison, to create conditions for reconciliation. The ones who create conditions for reconciliation are those who keep in prison their political opponents. This is the reality. Now, what we are doing is, through democratic demonstration, through speeches, marches, and gathering, to announce to the international opinion that our country is not a democratic country. There are hundreds and hundreds of political prisoners. There are thousands of exiled political refugees in Liberia, in Ghana, in Togo. And this situation is not good for the reconciliation. So what we are claiming is the liberation of the prisoners, so that we can come together to a political discussion which can give a future to the country.
The International Criminal Court on Wednesday ordered a new review into whether former President Laurent Gbagbo should be released from detention while his trial is going on. And what's your reaction?
Yeah, we did hear that, and we are happy about this decision, because there is no reason why they should say that there will be no more analysis of his demand of freedom. So we are waiting for the criminal court. We hope that they will review this demand and release him once for all.
Jean Gilbert Chaidi is the vice president in charge of finance and budget for former President Laurent Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party. He was speaking with me from the Ivorian capital, Abidjan. Appeals judges of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, on Wednesday ordered a new review into whether former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo should be released from prison while his trial for crimes against humanity continues in The Hague. Mr. Gbagbo has been in the court's detention unit since late 2011 and will remain there pending the new review. Prem Preet Singh is senior counsel at Human Rights Watch. She says the judge's order is one more proof that the ICC is not a court that focuses just on convicting the accused, but rather a court that is about delivering a fair process.
Basically, earlier this year, a trial chamber reviewed Gbagbo's detention and essentially said that he had to remain in detention because they couldn't find compelling reasons for that to change. And that decision was appealed. And today, the appeals chamber ruled on that request and essentially found that the trial chamber made a mistake, and actually made several mistakes, in justifying its decision to keep Gbagbo in detention, and essentially instructed the trial chamber to do it again. And, you know, during this process, Gbagbo will remain in detention.
In terms of good or bad news, is this good news for the former president?
I mean, I would say it's good news in terms of the fairness of the process. I think this shows there, it's another example that the ICC isn't a court about convictions. It's a court about delivering a fair process for those accused of grave crimes. And, you know, Gbagbo deserves a fair assessment of whether or not he's eligible for release. The appeals chamber didn't think he had that, and now he'll have another opportunity to basically present the arguments to justify why he should be released while his trial is going on.
One of the questions I've always asked is this. Does the court have anything to charge the former president with? Otherwise, are they holding him and looking for the charges?
No, I mean, he's on trial now. So there are, I mean, he has been formally charged. And, you know, right now the prosecution is presenting evidence to the judges, you know, to prove their theory of the case and to show that he is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And then it'll be time for, you know, his defense counsel to present their case, and then the judges will decide whether or not there's enough evidence to justify his conviction.
So what does this new development, what does that do to the trial? Is the trial going to be on hold until this new development is sorted out?
It doesn't change the trial. This is just sort of a separate, you could say, of the process against Bagbo. I mean, the prosecution will continue presenting witnesses to support its case, but in addition, you know, both prosecution and defense will put forward submissions. You know, the prosecution is obviously going to oppose his release, whereas the defense will have an opportunity to make the case as to why Bagbo should be released while the trial is going on.
Prem, thanks. So nice to talk with you.
You too. Take care, James.
Prem Preet Singh is senior counsel at the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch. She was speaking with me from New York City. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 20th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Liberia's Elections Commission has published a provisional candidates list for the country's October presidential and parliamentary election. But the list is minus the presidential and vice presidential candidates of the Liberty Party, Charles Bromskin and Harrison Kanwie, as well as the presidential candidate of the Alternative Congress Party, Alexander Cummings, and his running mate and former ambassador to the United States, Jeremiah Solonte. The Elections Commission disqualified the two vice presidential candidates because it said they did not meet the requirements of the Code of Conduct for government officials. Both parties have challenged the commission's decision in the Supreme Court. Opinions are divided, with some saying the commission's decision is an example of the rule of law, while others say it is a recipe for trouble. Henry Flomo is spokesman for the Elections Commission of Liberia.
Mr. Bromskin is not on the list because when it comes to the presidency, it's about a ticket. So the ticket comprises a presidential candidate and a vice presidential candidate. If one is affected, it means the other is affected.
But we understand that Mr. Bromskin has taken an appeal to the Supreme Court.
Sure, yes. It is taking a remedy to the court as the highest court. They are the final arbiter. The hearing was sometime last week. We are awaiting ruling from the Supreme Court.
What about the Alternative National Congress Party of Mr. Alex Cummings?
Yeah, it's almost similar case. The vice standard bearer of that party, Mr. Solonte, was also rejected by the commission, and they have taken an appeal at the level of the Supreme Court, and that hearing was on Monday, and we are also awaiting ruling from the Supreme Court. And again, whatever the Supreme Court comes our way is what we're going to live by.
Let me ask the question about the Union of Liberian Democrats, which had chosen Ms. Magdela Cooper as its presidential candidate. But then there was a court ruling declaring her candidacy null and void. I did not see that party on that list. Maybe I was running too fast with my eyes, but why?
Well, the reason could just be that the process is on. Probably they are waiting for the last days to the conclusion of the nomination. But yes, they are recognized. We don't have problem with them. But we still have, I think, 2 days. It ends on the 21st. As you know, we added 10 additional days, and that decision was overwhelmingly endorsed by the political parties.
There are two sides to this idea of the code of conduct. Others say that, yes, it's time for the rule of law to prevail in Liberia. Other people say this is a recipe for trouble during this election cycle.
Well, for us, we don't speak on how the people really feel, but we were mandated by law to implement the aspect of the code of conduct that dwells on elections. And that's what we are doing. And we are doing it just in line with the law. We don't have problem with any individual or political party. It is not in our interest to deny anybody, but it is in our interest to implement the law. That is the Constitution, the new electoral law, our holding laws, and now the code of conduct, especially the amended portion, which deals with elections.
I understand the commission has made some adjustment to releasing its final voter registration. Could you explain why that?
Sure. We should have the release of the final voter registration figures. We've extended that to the 28th. That should have been on the 15th of July. We've extended that to the 28th. And then we've also extended the replacement of lost and damaged voter cards. That should have been in July as well, the 17th to the 22nd. It is now set for the 7th of August to the 12th. And the reason for that, especially for the announcement of the final figures, is because we have some problems, especially with the public, who did not really grasp the understanding of the exhibition. So we try to satisfy everybody. We want to come up with a rule that will be acceptable to all, credible. So we've embarked on a physical verification or manual counts of our process. And we also invite some international friends to sort of give a third eye. They did that early July. We are waiting for the final report. So those two reasons are behind the extension of the date of the final figure of the voter roll.
Henry Flomo is spokesman for Liberia's Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Chocolatiers in Ghana are working to build their business and hopefully expand the reach of Ghanaian-made chocolates throughout West Africa and beyond. Salisse Atadika, founder of Midunu Chocolates, talked to Ricky Stryak about the hurdles of starting a business in Ghana and why she is passionate about a local food and developing chocolate goods in Ghana.
The parent company, Midunu, we do a lot of food cuisine around adding value to local ingredients. And being back in Ghana, cocoa was one of the main ingredients that, or items that we make and produce as a country. And it was just very glaring to me that we weren't adding a lot of value to that, and we were doing a lot of export of the raw ingredients. So kind of just came out of sort of seeing the gap in the market and seeing the possibilities of what we could really do with chocolate in Ghana.
And where does your chocolate come from, and then where do you sell it?
We are actually chocolatiers. We're not chocolate makers at the moment. We take a chocolate couverture that's being produced locally, and we then make ganaches and fillings and add value to the flavors and to the chocolate that is available. We have three vendors locally that we use in Accra, and we also sell directly from ourselves for events and for other sort of bulk purchases.
What are some of the obstacles to being a local entrepreneur in Ghana and also someone who's trying to make something locally from the resources in Ghana? What are some of the challenges?
I think the, some of the infrastructural issues that probably cut across all industries are some of the electricity, having power cuts and having the capacity to manage them with either generators or inverters or solar, and also being able to pay for the fuel if you're using a generator, which has an increased cost. It's definitely much more expensive than sort of the normal electricity that we would be getting. Other challenges for food industry and other businesses is water. Having access to water, sometimes there are shortages of water. So for us, we have a generator and we have backup water. We have a borehole and a water treatment plant to cover that. Some other challenges, I think, are in terms of human resources, in terms of the level of skill that you require from staff to be able to put it out. So chocolate, for example, is quite delicate and sensitive. It requires knowledge of tempering and being able to manage the chocolate up to even 1 degree of temperature can change the quality of the chocolate that comes out. So it's,
given those challenges, what are you guys looking forward to in the future for Midunu? Where do you want to go from here for the chocolate brand?
One definite thing we would like to do is start moving further down the chain of production. So being able to produce from liqueur, being able to produce from bean to bar would be something that would be ideal for us. I think another one would be looking to expand our market beyond Accra into other parts of the country, as well as other parts of the region, to other countries within Africa and outside of Africa, so that we can really get people to taste our chocolate, to understand the flavors, because flavors of our chocolate are based on what we have locally available.
That was Selassie Atadika, founder of Midunu Chocolates. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Ghana's capital, Accra. Malawi's Anti-Corruption Bureau, known as ACB, has arrested a former agriculture minister and two others linked to a corruption scandal involving maize imports. Malawi was importing the grain to avert food shortages after flooding and drought wrecked last year's harvest. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
ACB officials Wednesday announced the arrest of Agriculture Minister George Jabonda, along with businesswoman Grace Mijiga Muhango and Rashid Tayub, an entrepreneur based in Blantyre. They are accused of illegal actions in the procurement of 100,000 tons of maize from Zambia by Malawi's grain marketer ADMARC, the Agriculture Development and Marketing Corporation. Mijiga chairs Malawi's Grain Traders and Processors Association. The arrest come after two commissions of inquiry established by President Peter Mutharika and Parliament in January recommended the investigations into Chabonda and others linked to the scandal dubbed Maizegate. Renek Matemba, the ACB's deputy director, he told reporters the defendants have not yet been formally charged.
We normally charge our suspects towards the end. That's why we now decide which charges depending on the information that we have received from them. Currently, they are being interviewed.
The ACB, however, said in a statement Wednesday that Chabonda is likely to be charged with corruptly performing public functions, misuse of public office, and possession of foreign currency, while Muhango is likely to be charged with forgery. Tayub is expected to answer charges of influencing a public officer to misuse public office. In February, President Mutharika fired Chabonda after investigators found nearly $200,000 in cash in the minister's home. Documents leaked to local media in December point to irregularities. The documents indicate ADMARC bought the consignment of maize for $34.5 million from a private Zambian trader. The records allege the maize could have been purchased from Zambia's government for about two-thirds of that, or $21.5 million. Both Chabonda and Muhango deny the wrongdoing. ADMARC has denied the allegations. Charles Kajoloweka is among civil society leaders who have been pushing for justice in the scandal. He told VOA that Chabonda's arrest has come too late.
It is a progressive action, but it is coming, a little late, especially when you consider that these inquiry reports, were released some 6 months ago.
Kajoloweka says he feels the delay confirms that Chabonda, a senior member of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, had continued to enjoy protection under the current political leadership. In a statement, however, ACB officials have ruled out any political interference in the matter, saying the process of investigations is complicated and needs to be conducted with due process and detailed care. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
And that's it for this Thursday, July 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a very good Thursday.
Hello, this is Peter Clarty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Rwanda's August 4th presidential election. Incumbent Paul Kagame is widely expected to win another term. The amended constitution allows him to remain in power until 2034 if he pursues it. A preview of Rwanda's presidential election.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.